This has the whiff of August 1945. Somebody just used a new weapon, and this weapon will not be put back into the box.
In his latest film, Zero Days, Academy Award-winning documentarian Alex Gibney delves into the creation and deployment of the Stuxnet virus, an act Gibney believes is a game-changing moment in cyber warfare.
Stuxnet was a self-replicating virus, a worm, a piece of malware, that was launched by the U.S. and Israel into the centrifuges of the Natanz nuclear plant in Iran. And its purpose was to secretly make the centrifuges spin out of control until they blew up, but to send messages back to the engineers that all was well. So it was both a weapon of destruction, but it was also meant to sow doubt in the minds of the scientists. The reason it's hugely significant is it's the first time the computer code has crossed the threshold from the realm of cyber to the realm of the physical and starts blowing stuff up.
It seems to me from the film, Stuxnet worked in the beginning, and it was only after, according to NSA officials on background, they said that Israel basically warped the code. Was it bad to produce? Was it bad for the United States to go into that sphere?
Look, it's a good question. And frankly, personally, and I know a lot of other people who feel the same way, as a weapon, it was a brilliant and elegant weapon, which achieved a goal of slowing down Iran's path to being a nuclear power. However, as a precedent, it was extremely dangerous because it was an attack on critical infrastructure in peacetime. If that had been done to us, we would have been within our rights to start a war. And so if you're saying, well, it's okay now, we're setting a new norm to launch a cyber weapon on critical infrastructure whenever we feel like it, that's a dangerous norm because that becomes the norm for everybody. And one of the most disquieting things about Stuxnet is how far beyond Stuxnet the sophistication of the weapons have become and their use. The two people who discovered Stuxnet at the beginning, Eric and Liam from Symantec, they would see one or two state-sponsored attacks in, say, 2010. Now they see over 100.
What makes cyber warfare the same and different than traditional warfare?
It's interesting that cyber weapons can only be launched with the permission of the President of the United States. That makes them analogous entirely to nuclear weapons. The nuclear analogy can be overdrawn, but I think it's important to understand because in cyber war, I mean, obviously there's a certain element to this we can always understand that goes way back to signals intelligence. That is to say, things like capturing radio signals of the enemy and being able to understand where they're going or possibly jamming them. Now with cyber weapons, it goes beyond espionage, though it starts as an espionage tool. It goes beyond espionage to be able to take control of machines and cause physical destruction. So in war, you can understand how hugely valuable that would be, but also how dangerous it is. So you want, you know, the anti-aircraft guns or surface-to-air missiles. You take down the electrical grid that supplies that power, and suddenly that's a great strategic weapon. The problem is that you may also take down hospitals and other things of that nature that could cause a lot of civilian deaths. So the potential for enormous destruction and loss of life is palpably there when it comes to cyber weapons. The other interesting element I think that nobody's really focused on is the Department of Justice issued indictments, I believe, for a number of Iranians for having launched a cyber attack on American banks. I found that ironic, considering the fact that we could logically assume that there will soon be indictments on certain members of the NSA for having launched a cyber attack on Iran. This is the tricky part. You know, there's the technical aspect of these weapons, but then there's the law. And this is what takes you into the torture debate, into the drone debate, and all of that other stuff. People can talk about techniques all they want, but at some point you have to begin to talk about reciprocity, the law, and values. And that's where the rubber meets the road.
In many ways, this film is a detective story, but it's also a story about transparency and secrecy.
Yes. We know that Stuxnet was launched by Israel and the United States against Iran. The United States won't admit that. Israel won't admit that. Sometimes people in Israel do so with a kind of wink and a nod, but officially they won't admit it. And that's problematic in and of itself because it already happened. We know it happened. We know who did it, but still nobody will admit it.
Since the event has already happened, why can't we talk more openly and publicly about Stuxnet?
Yeah. I mean, my answer is because it's classified.
I won't knowingly offer up anything I consider classified.
I know that you can't talk much about Stuxnet because Stuxnet is officially classified.
You're right on both those counts.
But there has been a lot reported about it in the press.
I don't want to comment on this. I read it in the newspapers, in the media like you, but I'm unable to elaborate upon it.
People might find it frustrating not to be able to talk about it when it's in the public domain, but...
I find it frustrating.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
I don't answer that question.
Unfortunately, I can't comment.
I do not know how to answer that.
Two answers before you even get started. I don't know, and if I did, we wouldn't talk about it anyway.
We have a situation now where the weapons have gone way beyond Stuxnet in terms of their sophistication and their destructive power. Yet by keeping that offensive cyber capability secret, we deprive everybody in this country, in a democracy, of having any kind of debate over how and when and why they should be used. So the secrecy is actually putting us at existential risk in this case.
Who do you blame for the secrecy?
The obsession with secrecy has increased exponentially from the Bush administration now to the Obama administration. Who knew that the Obama administration, which claimed that it was going to be the most transparent administration in history, was going to prosecute more leakers than any of all the previous administrations combined. So there has been a kind of momentum for secrecy that, which is understandable, I suppose, but I think we have to resist it because now so much is secret that it becomes a kind of default position. So we have a kind of opaque government that no longer responds to the will or consent of the people.
What about the individual? As someone who doesn't have faith in large government institutions, I mean, should we be hoarding water and growing crisis gardens? Like, what's the answer for the individual here?
Look, there are a few things. I mean, one is that we should be properly cautious about using our computers and the internet because of the enormous destructive power that is abroad in the land and the way that the internet has been militarized. It's scary, but we should be conscious of it. More fundamentally, you know, these cyber weapons, which are not being talked about by our own government, can put us at existential risk. We have to raise our voices in a democracy to say, we got to have a discussion about this. My kids are at risk. My way of life is at risk. And you're not copping to me about the nature of that risk or what you're doing about it. So in that context, I think we should all be furious.
A number of your films, Zero Days, Smartest Guys in the Room, Mea Maxima Culpa, Going Clear, they center around sort of shadowy groups with worldwide, often illegal secret plans. What draws you to these stories, which I think must be inherently difficult just because of the sprawling nature and the secrecy behind them? And also, do you consider yourself a conspiracy factualist?
Yeah, I don't really believe in, you're right, I'm not a conspiracy theorist in the sense that usually conspiracy theories revolve around supreme intelligence that is somehow masterminding. And I don't have that much confidence in people's intelligence to get that right. So that's where the conspiracy theories for me usually fall down. But I am interested in abuses of power. And part of power and abusing power usually has to do with secrecy. And so you have to pierce that veil of secrecy, or try to, in order to be able to get at and understand those abuses.
Are you optimistic that this will get worked out, or are you pessimistic?
In the short term, I'm pessimistic, but hopeful. As Richard Clarke says in the film, everybody said we couldn't do agreements relating to nuclear weapons. We did. Everyone said the same thing about chemical weapons. We did. I think we can get it right with cyber weapons, but we have to have the will to do it. And right now, the norm, as a former NSA JAG also says in the film, is that there should be no norm, that there are no rules, and that's not a very good norm. That puts us all at risk.